Earth, United States, 1955, Montgomery, Alabama, if I'm reading this properly. New displays, still figuring them out.
Adam, remember when you were talking to me about kind of Doctor Who using like modern music? And you were, and it was like a trailer that came out, right? And they used a song. You were like, I don't think they've done this before. They used like a modern song in this trailer.
Yeah, they dropped in Macklemore's Glorious.
Okay, yeah. And like, I was thinking about that even just in the episodes in general, like in modern Doctor Who, in the you know, new Who, that they don't really drop a lot of like music, modern music cues, you know, throughout.
No,
I was trying
not
to think of examples when they do, but they did once. Which is actually kind of an interesting parallel for Rosa, because it was also an episode with an actual historical figure. Do you remember this, what I'm talking about?
The only historical figure that comes to mind would be Van Gogh, but I can't remember any of the musical cues from that episode.
So they did at the very end. Remember when Van Gogh goes to the gallery and sees his own work and sees how everyone appreciated it?
How in the world could I forget that moment, Aaron?
That
Seriously.
Music, they play a music cue from that. It was a song from the band Athlete, and it's like one of my favorite songs now. I downloaded it as soon as I remember watching the episode and being like, that song was amazing. And it was like the perfect time where they played it, and it was that emotional cue, like what was happening.
You know,
he's realizing how he impacted history, and the music comes up, and it's like this modern song. And it gets you like emotional, you know, you get choked up because the combination of an emotional moment with music, like it's just magic, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so like they, in that, you know, in this Rose episode, they had kind of a similar situation at the very end of the episode. Very similar. I thought it was an interesting, some of the parallels, having a historical character, having an impactful moment, then this music cue comes in, and I was like, oh wow, this is so perfect. Like, and the song, I had heard, you know, I heard the song, it's called Rise Up, right?
Andra Day, Rise
yes.
Up.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so they played Rise Up, which I wasn't super familiar with the song. Like, it was one of those songs when you hear it, it sounds familiar, but you don't know where you've heard it before. And then I went and looked it up, and then I guess it's a song that was released in 2015, so it's not like it's not brand new, but definitely a modern song. So,
but yeah, it definitely drives the emotion. It drives the moment. And this the song that they use at the end of this episode, although I don't remember the Van Gogh one, I know that in that moment there is a lot of emotion welling up. And prior to this episode, prior to Rosa, I would say that Van Gogh was the most emotional episode for me, outside of Tennant saying that he doesn't want to go. but now, like this episode, there is that parallel of both of them use have historical characters, but those emotions at the end are so nailed. They nail those moments, and the music has a lot to do with it in Rosa.
Yeah, definitely. And I challenge you and any of our listeners, after you're done listening to this, is go back to the Van Gogh episode and just go right to the end and just rewatch that, and you'll see what I'm talking about. If you're not remembering kind of the musical cue that comes up and kind of the emotion that it brought. But I would definitely, that's like when I say the Van, what's the name of that episode again? Do you remember? Is it Van Gogh or Vincent? Vincent and the Doctor. Vincent and the Doctor, right?
Vincent and the Doctor.
Okay.
Right. Yep.
So that's one of my favorite episodes of Doctor Who. I know we've talked about it before. But that specific scene in the episode is one of my favorite scenes in Doctor Who. Just that kind of this historical figure that was able to actually see the impact that they had. And we don't necessarily get a similar thing that happens in Rosa, because, you know, it stayed very much in that moment. They didn't take her into the TARDIS or anything like that. She never even knew that they were anything other than just people, right?
No, yeah.
Which is a pretty big difference. I mean, I don't know if you can, and we've kind of just like gone right into the review here, but we'll get to the official like data on this episode. But I don't think there's any instance I can remember in modern Who that they met a historical figure where that historical figure wasn't tipped off to the fact that the Doctor was the Doctor, or was an alien or had a TARDIS. Because he's definitely gone back and met historical figures before, but they were always part of the sci-fi elements, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Shakespeare and Van Gogh, they were aware of the monsters. They were aware of the magic. You know, they were aware of the scientific things that were going on. They were aware of the doctor. But in this is a very unique episode in that Rosa really wasn't aware that she was dealing with extraterrestrial things.
And yeah, I would totally agree. That's, I mean, we do have the mention of Elvis and the mobile phone and Frank Sinatra and the mobile phone. And so there are those other historical characters in the time period that know of the doctor and kind of know who she is. But this episode is unique, I think, in that point, as far as it's not a Doctor Light episode, but it's definitely not Doctor focused, if you will. There's a whole heck of a lot more going on in this episode than necessarily the Doctor and or Doctor Who in general, Doctor Who-esque. Yeah, it's unique in a lot of ways.
Yes, which was appropriate, but we'll talk about the whys and all the other things that come along with this episode. But before we get there, let's officially kind of go over the stats of this episode. So this is Rosa, Series 11, Episode 3. And this one was directed by Mark Tondorei and written by Mallory Blackman and Chris Chibnall, which this is kind of a groundbreaking episode of Doctor Who in that this is the first, this is kind of crazy to say out loud, this is the first episode in the entire history of Doctor Who that was written by someone that was not white.
Yeah, it's the first episode written by a person of color.
Isn't that crazy?
It is, and this definitely, like, we aren't the only ones saying this. It has been written up time and time again how for a show that has more so in recent time kind of prided itself on being inclusive and working towards including varied races and ethnicities in the show itself, that this is actually a pretty big way that it was lagging behind, and actually quite a big step forward for Doctor Who in general to have Mallory Blackman be part of the writing of the episode. And dang, it was a good episode, in my opinion. It was written really, really well.
Yeah, and I mean, if you really think about it, what better episode to have be the first? I mean, it should have happened already, you know, a long time ago, probably, that there should have been a person of color that wrote a Doctor Who episode before now, but the fact that this is the first one, it's appropriate that this is the subject matter.
Yeah.
So, and Chris Chibnall co-wrote it as well. This is the third episode of The New Doctor, and man, Chibnall's influence is showing so much so far in this season, this series of Doctor Who. In this episode, man, It wasn't very far into the episode at all where I was just like, wow, this is going to be a heavy subject to watch, and it being a Doctor Who episode. Now, it's not that we've never had Doctor Who episodes in the past that have been, you know, maybe a little darker or a little more dramatic or scary. You know, it's not always lighthearted, but man, this one really got, it didn't shy away from things that would make you feel uncomfortable.
Oh, absolutely not. Prior to watching the episode, I tried to avoid social media as much as possible because I don't want to be spoiled. I there are elements that I'll be like, okay, I'll accept that. I might see a headline, but for the most part, I try to avoid all things having to do with the episode until I've watched it personally. But one of the things that I woke up Monday morning seeing before I was able to watch the show is that the episode was described by a vast majority of people in two ways. Number one, powerful, and number two, uncomfortable. And that had me curious going into watching it the first time. And I have to say it was definitely both. Another way that it was very a very unique Doctor Who episode is that it was uncomfortable for great reason. I mean, it wasn't gross, it wasn't gruesome, it was just downright uncomfortable based on the subject matter and really the relevance of it to kind of cultural trends that we're seeing around us and things that are being highlighted. But it was also a super powerful episode, and I don't know, maybe you have something in mind or other episodes in mind, but I don't think we've ever seen an episode that is this relevantly powerful, if that's even a way to put it, of Doctor Who. Maybe back in the day, but there was something very unique about this one.
Yeah, I mean, even when Doctor Who has covered kind of more serious subject matter, it always does it in almost a humorous way. I know, like, even some of the call-outs in the past, this isn't the first time that the Doctor has traveled with companions who were people of color. You know, obviously we've had, you know, Martha and we've had Bill in the modern series, and they actually did call out different situations that they'd be in where they'd travel into the past and then they would be kind of like, hey, should I be worried kind of thing?
Yeah.
And they almost kind of, you know, glossed over it with humor. You know, I think with Tennant, I forget what he said to Martha, and I should remember because that was Shakespeare Code and I just watched that episode not that long ago.
Oh, but hold on. Am I all right? I'm not going to get carted off as a slave, am I?
Why would they do that?
Not exactly why, in case you haven't noticed.
I'm not even human. Just walk about like you own the place. It works for me. Besides, you'd be surprised. Elizabethan England, not so different from your time.
But he did say something to her to kind of be like, oh, no one's going to really notice. And then I think with Bill, wasn't it like, didn't Capaldi say something like, oh, the past had a little bit more... Oh, man, I don't want to misquote it.
Wait, you want to go out there?
You don't.
It's 1814. Melanin.
Yes?
Slavery is still totally a thing.
Yes, it is.
Might be, like, dangerous out there. Interesting.
What is?
Regency England. A bit more black than they show in the movies.
So was Jesus. History's a whitewash.
The festival that they did on the frozen river.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that episode, again, like you say, we've had instances come up in the past and most recently with Bill, in that episode that you're referring to, but it's always approached slightly differently. And in that episode, the one that is making a racist comment ends up getting punched. Like it's
right.
It's kind of just like, the punch takes place and then it's done. And like that uncomfortable moment is diffused and you're able to move past it and nothing else comes of it.
And isn't it the Doctor that does the punching?
I'm pretty sure it is. I'm pretty sure Capaldi is the one that hauls off and punches the guy.
Yeah. And even like, you know, if you're going to include something like, you know, Hitler was mentioned in an episode the whole idea of the episode is let's kill Hitler.
Yeah.
And so it's not like that. It's not that Doctor Who hasn't kind of touched upon some of these uncomfortable historical things, but it tends to do it with a little bit of humor and kind of gloss over it a bit. This is the first time I felt like I watched a Doctor Who episode where it literally kind of hits you in the gut when you see the excitement on Yaz's face when they have traveled back in time, and the Doctor's like, "Okay, we need to go out and do this thing. And then we'll get you back home." And you can just see in Yaz's face the excitement that she has traveled back in time.
Yeah.
Only yep. to be faced right away on the street with a very racist moment where this guy physically assaults Ryan. And it's like, it almost kind of felt like you got slapped in the face. Like, it was like, whoa, what did I just see happen to a, you know, to a companion? Like, I've never seen that in Doctor Who before.
Yeah.
You almost wanted to like jump into the screen and do something about it. You know, it's kind of like, what did I just witness?
Yeah. And it's in that moment where where we kind of suspend the magic of Doctor Who in the awe and wonder, and like reality comes like bearing, I'm lost for words, like reality just comes flooding into, oh my goodness, what is this show that I'm watching? Like, what are we in for? And I don't know. There's just something about this episode where even this series leading up to this point, but I think it's confirmed in my mind that it feels like Doctor Who in a way, compared to the series of New Who that have come before it, it's kind of growing up. Like, am I wrong about that? Like, is Chibnall bringing just maybe an ounce more maturity and a different approach to Doctor Who? Is it still a kid's show?
I would definitely say so far it has been a much less silly show.
Okay. I mean, maybe that's definitely the best way to put it.
There's definitely been moments still of kind of, you know, humorous things and things that are a bit more silly, but they don't lean as heavy into it. And I know, you know, we were kind of talking about Capaldi's first episode, and you have, you know, a giant dinosaur that swallowed the TARDIS. You know, that's kind of what you start off with. And we haven't gotten anything near that in this, you know, with this new Doctor. If you look at this episode in particular, if you really think about it, other than the fact that the guy that they were kind of, you know, was kind of the foil, was a time traveler, there really wasn't hardly anything in this episode that would indicate that it was sci-fi at all. Like, yeah, there wasn't a crazy alien. You know, even in the Van Gogh episode, you had the big crazy alien. You know, yep. In the Shakespeare episode, exactly. You had the witches. You know, there was always something that even these historical episodes have always had these elements that were very heavy sci-fi. This didn't at all. This felt like a historical, you know, it felt like I was just watching a biography of Rosa Parks. It just happened the Doctor was there.
Yeah. And I just want to call that out because I know, like, when we first started getting rumors of Rosa Parks being a character in an episode, I remember a discussion that we had in regards to, I wonder how they're going to handle this. Like, mm-hmm. Because we are so used to historical moments, historical characters having this weird alien or supernatural kind of like twinge to it. There's always some science behind it. There's always something else taking place. And I remember at the time mentioning like that Rosa Parks is sacred. Like, how can you have a Doctor Who episode the way that we've seen them handled previously, including Rosa Parks? How is that going to look? How is that going to work out? And honestly, like, at the end of the day, I think they handled it extremely well, considering the type of show that it is and where they could have gone. They kept the sacred.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job with it. The way they portrayed Rosa Parks was very respectful. The actor that played her did a great job. And did you know that that actor actually has been in Doctor Who before?
I did not know that.
Yeah, so that Vinette Robinson also played the character Abby Lerner from the episode 42.
Which seriously, is another Chibnall.
A Chibnall episode. So this is another episode. Like, we had talked about how it feels like every episode so far we've gotten an actor that has worked with Chibnall before. Yeah, the streak has not been broken.
we're so three for this, three.
Yeah, from a Chibnall episode of Doctor Who, way back Tennant era,
yeah.
That
wow.
She played that character. And I saw a picture, and she doesn't look like, I know that was that episode was a while ago, 2007, so you're talking 11 years ago. But she looks the same. Like, she doesn't age.
nice.
So, yeah, that I thought that was an interesting fact. But yeah, I thought she played Rosa great. Like, very, just, it was very reverent to the character, or to the historical, not character, but the person. And you just felt like you were watching Rosa Parks. You know, there was no silly element. I feel like every time that they've gone back in history and met some of these historical characters, they've always been a bit caricaturized.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they didn't do that at all with Rosa Parks, which I thought is the only way you can do it. You know, you got to play it straight. And they did a really, I mean, it's a different kind of Doctor Who episode. And I think kind of my overall thoughts on it is they did a great job with it, but I don't know how many of these types of episodes I would want. Like, I don't know if I want Doctor Who to become this. I don't want Doctor Who to necessarily become, oh, let's go back and tell like these really serious historical things and just have the Doctor kind of be around. you know, the things that we're missing in this episode, the Doctor Who-ish things, I would want back, you know, for future episodes. I feel like this as a standalone, you know, episode that had a really important message and was really well done, worked, and it was perfect, and I loved it. But I wouldn't want this to become like the standard storytelling, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think that is, number one, I think that's understandable. And number two, I don't think saying that in any way, shape, or form detracts from how well done this episode was, how powerful this episode was, and really how solid of a, not necessarily Doctor Who, but how solid of a just TV episode in general this is. Like, it is, at the end of the day, an amazing representation of that period in time, but also the continued struggle that it is with how racism is very prevalent in the world around us today. It's from the very first moment where Ryan reaches down to grab the handkerchief to return it, and then he is confronted in that moment to Rosa Parks mentioning Emmett Till and the real life historical situation of Emmett Till and what took place and kind of the outcome of all of that. That's it doesn't pull any punches at all. And here we are just talking about how the Doctor punched racism last season. This one doesn't pull any punches whatever or whatsoever. And it kind of just continues to build. And there are certainly fun moments throughout the episode. There are great lines tossed out. There are moments of lightness, but the entire time there's this thread that is woven throughout that this is what it was. This is what is still there, and the battle's not over. We need to continue to push on and fight this.
Yeah, I was, and this is where I felt like Chibnall's influence could be seen, because having watched Broadchurch and some of the really serious topics that they cover in Broadchurch, I remember watching Broadchurch and being surprised, like, oh wow, they went there. Like, I can't believe that they're talking about this subject matter. And that was, as I was watching this episode, at first I was like surprised. I'm like, wow, they're really portraying the prejudices that existed at that time that were so prevalent, especially in the South, in that time period. And almost every person that they ran into showed this type of prejudice. It wasn't like, it wasn't a small element. It was like everybody, you know? And it's a sad, it's kind of a sad reminder of the history of, you know, of the some parts of this country. And like I said, at first I was a little surprised that they weren't shying away with it. Some of the terminology they were using, some of the slurs they were using, I was just like, wow, you know, you would think maybe they would have found a different way to say that or word that just because this is on TV. And then I was like, wait, you know, this is Chibnall. You know, I've seen Broadchurch. I've seen what he doesn't tend to shy away from some of this type of uncomfortable subject matter. So I probably shouldn't have been surprised, but it definitely was. It got emotional. You know, as you're watching it, you just felt emotional, an impact that it was making, which I think that was kind of the point, that they really didn't want to shy away because they wanted it to be impactful.
Right. And like the two episodes leading up to this one, I mean, Chibnall has done an incredible job of, I mean, you even said it after the first episode, you enjoyed Ryan's character so much more than what we were maybe expecting. And within the first two short episodes, at least I feel like such a great connection with Ryan and with Yaz and Graham, and like there's something about these companions that I've latched onto so quickly. And then it was really surprising to then see them treated, Yaz and Ryan in particular, treated in the way that they were in this episode. And you're right, like it elicited an emotional response to the point where, I mean, I told you before the episode, actually a couple times, I think I even messaged you, like I was on the verge of ugly crying at so many different points throughout the episode that it was just like it was a very emotional, and I don't know, it felt real and it felt uncomfortable, and it was like, oh dang. And when they're hiding behind, because the episode progresses and they meet Rosa Parks and they meet all sorts of other people, and then they go to a hotel or a motel and they have to sneak Yaz and Ryan in, and then they have to sneak out because of something else, and they're hiding behind a bin and they're having this very real conversation about, dang, this is hard, but yet there's still relevant bits of it even today in the life that they were living, and what their dad had told both of them in regards to, like, don't ever give them a reason. Yeah, it's just, it's an uber, uber emotional, and really, it's not an experience I have. Like, I can't even begin to understand. Like, yeah, my dad has made statements before in regards to, like, never give him a reason, but not for the same reasons that a character like that would have been told, never give them a reason. It's an eye-opening episode, especially with characters that, like, in such a short period of time, you've come to know and like so much, to also have them treated this way. It was, yeah, you kind of wanted to jump through the screen at times.
Yeah. So we've kind of been talking about just the heaviness of the episode and the serious subject matter and kind of how important the message in the episode is, but kind of just the story itself. There were other things. Like you said, there are moments that are, you know, some lighthearted moments. We do have this guy that they're kind of going against, you know, just to kind of talk through some of this other stuff. I will say I'm super happy that the TARDIS is back. I know we had talked about, like, the TARDIS. Oh, you were thinking, oh, maybe the TARDIS doesn't come till like episode 6. And I was hoping it would come earlier. And I'm really happy it did. I didn't, you know, like I said, I didn't think I realized how much I missed the TARDIS until she showed up at the end of the last episode. But to see the TARDIS, like, materialize in its, like, new form.
Yeah.
With, like, the different light and the different signage on the door. And just seeing that scene, like, that was so cool. Like, I got goosebumps. I was like, yes. Like, I don't know, something about seeing a new TARDIS materialize for the first time was pretty awesome.
Not only that, but the whole exchange that took place where Whitaker opens the door and it's like, not quite there yet.
Not quite.
And then, like, we get that statement as far as the TARDIS still takes the Doctor wherever the TARDIS thinks the Doctor needs to go.
And they had like 14, you know, she said, oh, that's 9 times or something like that. And then Graham corrects her and is like 14. Like, she's literally taking them to the wrong place or time 14 times now, which I saw some kind of speculation online where people were saying, does that mean that they, you know, there may be other adventures that they've already gone on, and then this is just, you know, we kind of didn't see those? Or do you think that they came straight from, you know, that race and landed in Alabama?
One thing, and I didn't get a chance to double check it after I saw, was, tell me what color Jodie's shirt was in this episode.
Red, burgundy.
Okay. Yeah. Her shirt in the ghost monument was blue.
Yeah.
So at some point,
She changed. So I have a question about this, because not only did she change, but I did notice at least Yaz has different clothes on. She has the same jacket, but a different sweater, and I think her shoes are different.
She doesn't have the red star shirt.
She doesn't have the red star. She's got like a polka dot sweater, and she's got pink shoes. I think she had gray shoes before, so, which were all Adidas. They were the same style. So here's my question, because does the TARDIS just generate clothing? I'm assuming there's a wardrobe somewhere in the TARDIS, but it was pretty specific to their style. So I almost wonder if the TARDIS just has the ability to generate clothing, and the Doctor was just, because did the Doctor buy a blue and a burgundy shirt at the thrift store, or did she just buy the blue one and then the TARDIS made a burgundy one for her? You know,
if it's
that's kind of
thrift store. I doubt that they have multiple shades.
Exactly,
they're
not going to have different shades, especially not in the same size.
And if they do, that's a thrift store that I want to go to, because I'm all about that stuff.
Yeah, so that's the kind of stuff I think about when I see her running around in this burgundy shirt. I was like, where did she get that? Did the TARDIS make it for her? Did she just happen to find two of the same shirt at the thrift store? Where did Yaz get her new sweater? Like,
I mean, it's, does that mean that there was extended period of time? Did they jump off the TARDIS at other points in time and so long that they had to change?
I want to see a montage of the 14 mistakes of where they landed. And like, I can just imagine that they landed like, in prehistoric age, and like, you know, some dinosaur comes up, or they landed in, you know, wherever, like, and just all these random, I just want to see like a quick clip of like every time they landed at the wrong spot.
Oh, you know, Whitaker could sell that. Like, all you would need is a TARDIS and her sticking her head out of the door in different places, and it would be gold. Like,
remember,
her facial expressions would be incredible.
I know, that's why I would love to see it. And remember in past seasons where they would do kind of those little shorts?
Yeah.
I think Smith's era seemed to be full of
them. Yeah. Smith did it with the Pond Life. Where,
yeah. They do the shorts.
Story. Yeah.
And, I mean, that's how we got the Eighth Doctor's regeneration.
Yeah. It was a short.
Right. It was in a short. So, I mean, they had some pretty cool little shorts. I could see that being kind of a prequel short where it's just like a little 5-minute clip of her taking them to all the wrong places before they land in Alabama. So yeah, that's pretty cool. The other thing clothing related was, I think this is the first time we've seen her without her jacket.
Yeah.
Where she was running around with the jacket off. And she actually has, so it kind of is a little bit of a reveal to the complete outfit, but she has like this long sleeve kind of white shirt underneath of the striped shirt.
Yeah, it totally reminded me of like my 13-year-old age where every t-shirt I wore had a long sleeve white t-shirt on underneath it. So
yeah, that was so 90s.
Like, ah, it looks like me.
So yeah, I thought that was kind of a cool detail. If we're, you know how we like to talk about the fashion every once in a while, we like to throw that in.
We're all about the costumes.
Yeah, but we did get the Elvis line where she says, you know, she lent him a cell phone, which played into the story later on, which was funny, because I guess Graham was pretty excited about the prospect of seeing Elvis since they were in the 50s.
Yes, but he was in New York, so it didn't work out.
And so how about the bad guy? We got Krasko.
Krasko, which I have to say, great name. Great name for bad guy.
Oh, yeah, the doctor wasn't impressed, remember? she asked him what his name was. He said Krasko, and she's like, eh. Oh, I forget what she said, like not impressed or I don't like it or something like that. He was an interesting guy because he never came across as very intimidating. They outsmarted him pretty much at every turn. And the doctor, although they did run from him, she really just stood right up to him in a couple different instances. Ryan stood right up to him. I never felt like he was intimidating.
No, you never felt he was intimidating?
No, I didn't. I never got that feeling because I guess my feelings on a villain is how scared the characters in the show are. You know, like if I should be worried for them, and they never really felt like they were in that much danger, specifically with him. It was more the other elements around that I felt like were more threatening than this guy was.
I mean, yeah, I can definitely say that. He didn't seem like he was the main focus. I think the situation that was being created was the main focus, and that was to cause more fear and anxiety than necessarily the character that of Krasko. That said, like rolling around in a white t-shirt and a leather jacket, like he looked pretty cool. Not gonna lie, I was all about the slick back hair and stuff.
He had a look. He had a good look. He wasn't cool. He was not a cool guy. He doesn't look cool.
Thank you for clarifying. He was not a good cool guy. He was a white supremacist Nazi. Like
exactly.
I get that.
The worst kind. But when he first shows up, you're kind of like, oh, who's this guy? Because he's got a knowledge of technology, the future technology. You know, he recognizes the TARDIS as a TARDIS, which I thought was interesting. It's not very often we run across characters that actually know, especially in its disguised form, that it's a TARDIS. So that shows a little bit about this guy. You know, he's trying to break into the TARDIS, all of that. The what did he have? He had like the thing on his wrist. What do they call that? What's the word
vortex
for that?
Vortex manipulator.
Vortex manipulator. That's a Captain Jack thing, right?
Or a River Song thing, River depending Song? On who you ask.
Okay. Yeah.
It's both of them. They I guess John Barrowman and Alex Kingston, they argue over whose it really is, but both of them used it at some point.
Yeah, so that's, you had talked about that possibility of one of those coming into play, because we were saying, well, how are they going to time travel without the TARDIS? And you had actually specifically brought up the idea of a vortex manipulator.
Yeah, I thought the Doctor was going to have one.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
And I guess she didn't even steal this one, because she just stomped it out. But yeah, so I thought, like, he actually was an interesting, it was interesting in that, like you said, he was a futuristic white supremacist. And, you know, the message of this episode, I think a lot of was Rosa Parks did start a change, and she made a huge impact and allowed for needed change in that time, which affected us all the way up until now. But it's still a problem. You know, it's not something that we eradicated, you know, like we have not up to this point in human history still have not eradicated racism. And so I think part of the message of this episode was she did a huge thing, but the work is still being done, and it's affecting, you know, characters like Ryan, like Yaz, and they're telling their own story on how they're affected in our modern age. But then you have this guy from the future, from who knows how far into the future, who is still a racist, you know? So it's not like even thousands of years in the future, it still hasn't been completely eradicated. So I think kind of the message of this episode was, this is a fight that we need to continue.
No, absolutely. I think the Doctor said like the 79th century or something like that. But that idea, I think there's a perception that either one, it's not an issue right now, and it's just kind of perception, or it can be chalked up to 100 other different things. But racism is not an issue right now, which I disagree with wholeheartedly. But then I think there's also the perception that, oh, it's like, it's going to be so much better 5-10 years from now. And that's definitely something we can hope for, and it's something that we can work towards. But that's exactly what it is. It's work. Like, there needs to be a fight that goes on. And I'm with you 100%. It is one of those things where it's like, Chibnall is, or our Mallory Blackman is giving that idea of there's still those threads, those strains that go throughout human history, however long that might go. It's something that we need to be cognizant of, and we need to continue to fight against and push back against and kind of wage that war. But yeah, it is interesting that they would take that character Krasko from the 79th century and show that that is still an issue.
Yeah, and he had that weapon that he had, the temporal displacement weapon, was probably the most intimidating thing about him. It kind of worked. It almost, the way they're describing the way it worked was kind of like how the Weeping Angels work, in that, like, if they touch you, they send you off, you know, somewhere else in time.
Yeah, I didn't make that connection, but you're right. Yeah.
But so it's kind of like the same idea, I guess, the Weeping Angels, you know, in a weapon form, a weaponized form. But, you know, that weapon was probably the most intimidating thing about him, but was also used against him. You know, the Doctor outsmarted him, threw his suitcase up in the air, and he ended up shooting his own equipment.
I loved that moment. I absolutely,
that was so good. Jodie Whittaker is, oh man, she is so good as the Doctor. She is surpassing all of my expectations. Like, I think I already kind of had some high expectations for her, but man, there's really nothing I can say about her that, like, is negative.
Yeah, there has not been a flat moment at all. Like, I kind of expected, at least by this point, some moment to come up where it's like, eh, that really wasn't, like, delivered well, or that, like, oh, that line could have been so much more powerful. It's like, she gets the most out of every single second of the show.
And bravo to the casting, whoever is responsible for casting all of these characters, because they really nailed it across the board with, you know, the doctor and the companions. I really just like, there's always been, you know, when I watch Doctor Who, you know, we talked about Capaldi and Bill and how I wasn't a huge fan of Bill. You know, there's other, you know, examples of characters that I was kind of like a little bit more groan worthy or like, I don't really like this character that much. But really for this one, man, I'm like on board with every single character, especially the main characters that they have had. I don't know. It's like Graham just dropping lines that I'm always laughing at. Yaz has like this like awesome kind of upbeat, positive personality that I just really enjoy to watch. Ryan is funny and flawed. Like, it's just, and then the doctor is just the doctor, and everything about the casting has just been so good. I can't say enough about how I've been overly impressed.
And I think what you said right there is like the greatest compliment, to be able to say that the doctor is just the doctor. Like that says so much right there. Like I think as fans, we come to expect so much and so much character and so much enthusiasm and so much personality out of the doctor, that when we can just step back and be like, the person I'm seeing on the screen, that's the doctor. That speaks worlds. And that's exactly what this experience has been, is being able to step back and no matter the episode, no matter the content matter, no matter whether it's funny or weighty or uncomfortable, the doctor has been the doctor. And it's so fun to watch. And you're spot on with the additional casting. Like, every one of the characters works so well together. I went back and watched The Ghost Monument today. I watched it again today. And just the interactions between Graham and Ryan and Yaz as they're like walking through the field with the doctor 30, 40 foot in front of them. And they're asking like, is she the real thing? The way that they interact and the one-liners, like you said, from Graham and that flawed awkwardness, but yet like the enthusiasm of Ryan and Yaz charisma, like it's so perfect. I don't know how it has been so perfect, but it has been.
I know it's kind of weird for us. I don't know. Like, I know we kind of said in the last episode how we don't typically fanboy all over stuff like this, but yeah, it's been a different experience. Like, I'm just really thrilled with the current state of Doctor Who.
I'm waiting for the first mismatch. Like, I'm waiting for the first time where it's like, oh, the two people on the screen, like, this is the character that should be on the show. And this one, meh, they're that little kid from the episode with all the trees. The name of it is escaping me. But all those random characters that we had pulled in for an episode or two, and it's like, they really shouldn't be on the screen. Like, why are they up there with the doctor? Like, I'm waiting for that first mismatch, and it doesn't seem like we've had it. And honestly, I don't know if we're going to get it.
The casting's been so good up to this point, even like the side characters that they've introduced, you know, even like I was just, you know, singing praises of the woman who played Rosa Parks. I just think maybe just they have a better, you know, better handle on the casting than previous versions of Doctor Who have. Because that's what really makes TV strong, is not only when your principal characters are strong actors, but when everyone on the screen is a strong actor. And I think that's really where I can, if I want to put my finger on what might be different about this season so far, is just everybody's performances have been really stellar. And I think the doctor herself is at a different stage. It's almost like every version of the doctor we've gotten previous has always been kind of growing into the doctor. You know, Capaldi showed up and he's kind of mean, and you're kind of like, okay, you know, this is a doctor that's got a chip on his shoulder and he's got to kind of, you know, figure out if he's a good man and all of that. And even with Smith, he was all angsty about stuff. And I feel like she's just there. Like, she kind of came, she started out like already there. And I kind of don't want to see her change. Like, every other doctor I've enjoyed the the journey of watching them kind of develop. With Jodie Whittaker's doctor, I almost just want her to be this way forever. Like, I just don't want her to necessarily grow or change. And not that I don't want her to go through struggles and, you know, have moments of doubt. And, you know, you saw a little bit of that in the Ghost Monument, where she, you know, they were talking about her fear and that mystery that they were kind of revealing. But, and I do want that stuff, but I, for the most part, I actually just like, I like how she is. You know, I don't think she needs to grow into the doctor. She kind of started out as the doctor already.
Yeah. Nope.
If that makes any sense.
Spot on. It makes sense.
And she's Banksy as well.
I absolutely loved that exchange. Or am I? There were so many of those moments. So, like, another one that sticks out to me is when Ryan is in the room with Fred Gray and Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks, and he says, "Excuse me, Martin Luther King Jr. I need to talk to or I need to speak to Rosa Parks or something like that." And yeah. Then he just says, and he giggles, and it's like
he's like, hey.
"It's the perfect."
Like, I just said that.
Yeah, it's the perfect expression of how I feel like I would be in that moment where it's like, this isn't really happening, and I've always referred to you as Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr., and so therefore that's how I'm going to refer to you right now, and I'm having an exchange with both of you. Like, just that realization that clicks with him in that moment. I love how filled with awe Ryan is at times. Like, when he sees the TARDIS for the first time and he's inside of it and it's a time ship, and he's like, he's just ecstatic. And it's not that he's immature or naive or however else you might want to classify him. He understands, like, the awe and the wonder of the moment. And that is so fun.
To say, this is kind of a random thing that I noticed, and this is maybe just my own, you know, bringing my own kind of TV watching baggage into this, but I just noticed a little bit of a connection between Yaz and Ryan. That it's almost like they might be planting the seeds of some sort of a connection between those two, like maybe at least some sort of interest.
Oh, yeah. I watched the Ghost Monument when they're in the boat and he's like, we're on an alien planet, and she's looking at him. When he climbs down the ladder and she waits for him and he's like, thanks for waiting for me. And she says, always. And then even in this episode, when they're behind the bins and they're talking, there's definitely something taking place there. But then there's when she talks about the last time she snuck through a window and he says, my estimation of you has just gone down. And she's like, did you just pay me an accidental compliment? Mm-hmm. And he's like, whatever. And he like runs off. Like, there is definitely something going on there. It feels like possible seeds.
Okay.
They are former classmates. Not just
me. Yeah. And I thought maybe like, early on, because they're similar age and they knew each other. They were classmates before and stuff. So I was like, maybe, because there's typically is, you know, so far in all of modern Who, there's always been some sort of a couple in some way, you know, we have, you know, like as early as Mickey and Rose and Amy and Rory, and even the Doctor has had his pairings. You know, I don't want the Doctor. I don't want this version of the Doctor to have any romantic like connection at all. I don't know why. I don't know why. I just feel like it wouldn't work as well for Jodie Whittaker and the way she's playing the Doctor. But I don't mind if some companions have a little bit of interest in each other.
So help me, though. If Chibnall does anything to Ryan or Yaz, we revolt. Like, I will not stand by that. I cannot take another loss. I've already lost Nan. I cannot take another.
Dude, get ready. I feel like... I just Chibnall, and having watched Broadchurch and what he did with some characters in that show, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we have a bit of a heartbreaking moment at some point.
Anything happens, I revolt.
Yeah, because I mean, that's Doctor Who, right? Like, there's always somebody gets left behind. Sometimes they get left behind. Sometimes they don't make it. You know, like whatever. Remember when Smith was talking to Rory's dad? I don't know if you remember that exchange, but
yes, I do remember that exchange.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that with there being three companions, that there's a possibility that maybe one doesn't. And I don't think I really don't feel like they would do something like super tragic, but I could see maybe one of them, for whatever reason, kind of getting left behind, like not sticking with the crew. I'm trying to think, like, we haven't really had a modern companion die. If you're not counting the side companions, like if you're just counting the main. I was going
to say Danny Pink. Danny Pink died.
Yeah, I don't really count him, but I guess you could. I don't know.
We're not going to have this discussion.
How did we have a Danny Pink reference?
I refuse.
three episodes into the new season, we just mentioned Danny Pink? What? Oh, man. What else? Like, what else is worth mentioning? I mean,
Storm Page, the guy couldn't kill anybody because he had a neural implant. There's all these little elements of the episode that, like, as you go through and you think back through everything, it's like, okay, there are Doctor Who elements in here, but the overall story and the overall the weight of the content overshadows all of that, and definitely not in a bad way. It's just when I think of this episode, my mind goes to those moments where Ryan is talking with Rosa, and like the spending the entire episode waiting. That's something interesting. Like the entire episode, you're waiting for this moment on the bus. And then when we get to that point, you're like really torn. Like you want her to, you want it to take place, but then on the flip side, the way that it has to take place, you kind of don't want to experience that.
Right. We're kind of at that point, we're almost seeing it through Graham's eyes, from Graham's perspective, where it's like, if you were in that situation and you can't do anything, you know, to help her, and the doctor even says, we cannot help her, you know, in this situation, we have to participate in what's going to happen. And so that means because the doctor is white and because Graham is white, they needed to continue to take up those seats.
Yeah.
And Graham, you could just see it, and great acting on his part, but you could just see it in his face how he was just devastated that he had to participate in this. Like, he didn't want to be a part of it. I think that's, like, he even says that. I don't want to be a part of this. Because Yaz says, oh, we're part of history. We have to stay on the bus. And he's like, I don't want to be a part of this, because of what that means for him. He was one of the people on that bus that was having the advantage of the privilege of just his skin color. And that's something that he didn't want to deal with. And that was really powerful for me to watch, and kind of realizing, you know, kind of what that situation would be like, and in the fact that he had to, you know, kind of just be complicit in all of it. Your heart really went out to him.
Yeah. And it's interesting, they don't make a big deal out of it either, but to see a doctor who is typically like the hero of the moments, having to, again, be in the same position to be complicit to what is taking place. But that moment when Rosa doesn't get up from the bus seat, and like, again, we mentioned at the very start of the episode, that music cue kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, your soul starts to soar, and like you feel that weight, and you still feel that uncomfortableness of having to witness even the recreation of it in a sci-fi Doctor Who show. But like, yeah, that is a powerful moment as she's walking past the bus and she's just looking up into the windows. It is a good moment.
Yeah. And then the doctor, you know, talks to the companions as they're traveling away from there, and kind of, you know, giving a little bit more to the history of the character. You know, I know everyone knows, well, most people know who Rosa Parks is and her importance in history, but I think a lot of people don't necessarily know a lot of the detail. And getting to see, I think that was another thing that was really powerful in this episode, is just getting kind of some of that detail. And I felt like, you know, I did a little bit of research after the episode, just to kind of see how historically accurate some of the stuff was. And it seemed like they pretty much So even the line that the bus driver says to her, or says to the people on the bus, and I don't remember if you have the script there, but he says a line specifically, like, you know, almost like, make this easier on yourselves and get up, you know, kind of thing. And it's an exact quote from an interview from the with that actual bus driver, the actual person that was the driver, had he said, this is what I said, and they use that exact line in the episode. So I like the attention to detail and the historical accuracy as well in that situation. And then the doctor kind of at the end kind of saying, hey, she still struggles, her and her husband lose their jobs, and you know, it's not until very much later that she gets like an award and all of that. You kind of get the filling in of the history as well. I thought the asteroid bit was a little odd, only because I don't think if an asteroid is named after somebody, it's not a really huge honor. I don't think anyone really knew. I didn't know there was an asteroid named after Rosa Parks. I had to look it up to see if it was even a real thing, and apparently it is, but they didn't name it after her until like 2014. It's a pretty unknown honor, I believe, that she's had. So I didn't know if that was kind of the most powerful thing to focus on at the very end, this asteroid. I thought that was a little odd, but I don't know if you had any kind of, you know, response to that.
No, I mean, it was interesting because in those last moments, they mentioned June 1999, Rosa receives the Congressional Medal from President Clinton, which honestly, I didn't know. So it was kind of interesting, I don't know, for me to sit there, who I kind of like to think that I know a lot about history. I guess not as much as what I thought, because I didn't know this, and to learn about it from Doctor Who, I thought was kind of, I don't know, I was disappointed in myself, but it was also cool to learn something from Doctor Who. But then the asteroid, it did seem like it didn't necessarily fit, but in context with the line where it says, in fact, she changed the universe, that was the one way that it's a tie back in. I don't think it's as powerful as the rest of the episode, but yeah, it's kind of one of those like cool factoids.
I think that was maybe why it bothered me too, because when she says that, like, and she changes the universe, you know, she has an asteroid named after her, I was thinking, well, that's just some guys in a room that are naming an asteroid. That's not necessarily because she changed the universe. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, it almost would have been more powerful even if it was a fictional planet or something that had been named after her or something, or a statue somewhere of, you know, of people, you know, like I said, fictional, but like a planet that had recognized her impact on the universe and had built some huge monument for her. Know, like, would have been more impactful to me than just a random asteroid that a couple of guys in a room, you know, decided, oh, let's name it after Rosa Parks.
I think it just speaks to the fact of how grounded they were trying to make this episode. Like, they really...
They didn't want the fictional, you know, sci-fi element to be focused on. They wanted it to be real. Everything in it was real, which I guess that kind of does make sense then.
Yeah. I think that might be the one intent behind it. But it did feel like, to me, they could have ended with the Congressional Medal of Honor in 1999 and then just left it. Like, not necessarily go into the whole... Because that line, she even changed the universe... It was probably the cheesiest line that we've gotten so far from this series.
Especially from this episode. It was a bit of a miss for me at the end, but overall, like, I really, really liked this episode a lot, and I think it was very powerful and had a very powerful message. The one thing I'll say, it taking all of that out of it, and I'm glad this Doctor Who episode exists. But I don't. The thing that I kept thinking as I was watching this is, like, I feel like I'm watching an episode of Quantum Leap. I don't know if you remember the show Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
Okay. Where he would kind of like go, like, he would jump into a situation, a lot of times historical type of situation, where he needed to kind of make sure something happened.
Yeah.
And to make sure things stay the same, or make sure somebody didn't get assassinated or whatever. And this episode felt very much like that, and in a lot of other television shows have kind of played around with some of those ideas. Like, there's a show that Timeless. I don't know. I think it just got canceled, but there was a show called Timeless that kind of dealt with some of that stuff. There was another show back in the day where this guy would get like a newspaper every morning.
Yeah.
Yep. With like the next day's news or something. Do you remember that?
Yep, I do.
Okay. So like it's not a new concept, and I've always been glad that Doctor Who has never gone there, because Doctor Who, being a time travel show, could totally go there and be like, hey, my whole job as the Doctor is to jump around and make sure these historical events stay the same, or make sure this person doesn't get assassinated. And it's an element that would be too easy for them to do, and I've always been happy that they never have done that. This is a different type of Doctor Who story. In that, I don't think there's any precedence for this, at least in the modern series of Doctor Who, because I'm not completely versed on classic stuff, that I don't think there's ever been a situation in Doctor Who where the Doctor has gone and specifically tried to manipulate, you know, events so something happens. A historical event happens.
I have no point of reference.
So that was my one thing. I remember finishing the episode and being like, okay, that was cool. I really liked it. It was very emotional. I liked the message. It's an important episode of Doctor Who. I don't want another one like that. Like, I don't want Doctor Who to become Quantum Leap. And that would be my one. And it's not even necessarily a criticism of the episode. It's more a criticism of, you know, I don't even know if criticism is the right word. It's just a hope, I guess, of mine, a personal hope that Doctor Who doesn't start to go too far in that direction of starting to become something it's never been before. Not in a positive way. It's almost like it gets tropey. I don't want it to get tropey.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely love this episode. And this is an episode I will come back to on a regular basis. And honestly, it probably, for the emotional aspects of it, it probably overshadows even the Vincent and the Doctor in regards to like one of those emotionally powerful episodes. That said, I don't know if I could handle a steady diet of episodes like this. Like maybe one every couple series would be good. But it definitely feels like it's out of the norm. But again, as we've said before, not to detract anything from this episode, I think both of us are in full agreement that this was a great episode. It was very well done, and it certainly has a powerful message, and it was really cool to see it communicated so well, through a show that I enjoy so much. This is a great episode, but yeah, it's one that it's like, it seemed like it peeled back a lot of layers that we were so used to in Doctor Who. And it didn't quite include those anymore. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the first episode of Chibnall's run of Doctor Who that is like more bizarre. If maybe we'll never get that. I mean, you know, he has kind of already said that there's not gonna be any of the classic villains, at least in this first series. Because you know, when the Daleks show up or the Cybermen show up, that is when Doctor Who gets a little bit more bizarre.
Yeah.
And I mean, the guy, you know, you have an alien with teeth in his face, and that's a bit bizarre, but it's still very based in some sort of level of reality where you're like, okay, I could see a warrior race that does that kind of crazy stuff. We've had historical, you know, Vikings and things like that that kind of did some crazy stuff with, you know, the way that they you know would present themselves and how they would try to make themselves look more menacing. So even that wasn't so far out of the ordinary. I guess like the whole like coil thing was a bit weird. That was maybe the most like Doctor Who-ish thing we've gotten so far.
Yeah, we also had like the like bandage monsters and Ghost Monument.
That's true.
And yeah. I mean, they've all had the elements, but none of them, I don't know. There's something about the way that the series is put together that it's not, I mean, you said the Stenzel armor looked rubber suitish and plastic, but it's not like massive rubber headed Zygons.
Exactly. And yes. It's not Zygons. I think Zygon is kind of the peak, you know, as cheesy as Daleks can be or Cybermen, the Zygon is kind of where you peak at, like the super cheesy Doctor Who.
Yeah.
there is the bizarre aliens that have yet to show up, I guess, is kind of what my point. That everything, although there have been some kind of more bizarre elements, has still felt pretty grounded. And I'm waiting to see if that's just the norm for Chibnall Doctor Who, or we just haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, I don't know. This next episode, I already know. I am going to struggle hardcore watching it. It deals with spiders. Like, that is extremely down to earth. They're dealing with arachnophobia there. And so again, it's another Doctor Who episode that seems like it's going to be fairly grounded and not just something like no rubber suited monsters.
Another big guest star. It looks like we might be meeting Yaz's family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely looks like it's actually based back. They got home, right? Because we got that clip where the doctor wants to go have tea with Yaz because she thinks they're all going to leave her. Did you watch that clip?
I did. Okay. That's a great clip.
It's a great clip. It's such a great clip. I just love the idea of the doctor kind of hemming and hawing about traveling. You know, like, yeah, I guess I'm going to go now. You know, kind of waiting for somebody to like volunteer. Like, okay. Definitely not as presumptive as previous doctors have been, kind of like almost they were almost cocky about like, oh yeah, you want to travel with me? You know, she's almost like kind of more like, you know, kicking her foot on the ground, like, yeah, I guess I'll go by myself now.
Yeah.
So I like that. It's definitely sticking to her established personality.
Yeah.
Fun fact for this episode, which this fact actually surprised me, is this is the first televised story since The Day of the Doctor, which was in 2013, to feature a real-world historical figure.
Oh, come on. Robin Hood?
Real-world historical figure.
Robin Hood?
Not quasi-historical, which I think they did establish in that episode with Robin Hood that he may have actually been a historical figure, but... Yeah. Going by our, you know, our standards of history. Yeah, I thought that was surprising. I don't know why I thought, you know, if you're going back 5 years, I just thought that there was another episode somewhere in there that they had gone back. Because they don't do it that often.
No,
I would love a list. And I don't think either of us are good enough with our episodes to be able to list it off right off the top of our head right now. But I would love a list of from Eccleston on, every actual historical figure that they've encountered.
Oh, dang.
And how long that list would be. I bet we'd be surprised how short it would be. I don't think there has been that many. Ooh, anything else?
I got some random thoughts. We kind of already alluded to it. There's no mention of the Stenza in this episode. The first two episodes, we had mentions of Stenza, Tim Shaw.
Good point. Nothing, they did not continue
nothing
that.
Came up in this one. We kind of expected it, considering the topic matter of this episode, but... No mention of the Stenza. The Steve Jobs reference I thought was funny. Well
Graham
played.
Graham is literally pitching the iPhone.
Yeah, literally pitching the iPhone. I thought it was – I saw something call it out, and honestly, it's been happening since like episode one, how often Graham calls the doctor Doc. There's just something about that.
When I like that says Doc. Because – I think in the past, different characters have referred to the Doctor as Doc, and the Doctor always kind of corrects them.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that the Doctor has just kind of let it slide, and I think she might actually like it as a nickname because she hasn't corrected him yet, and he pretty much just calls her Doc, which I think is kind of a cool – I actually think it's definitely a cool endearing thing between those two characters.
Yeah. We had a couple moments where Graham stepped up and called Ryan his grandson, and Ryan didn't correct him this episode. So is something getting
but
better?
But Ryan
there?
Did hold back on the fist bump.
He did hold back on the fist bump, though.
Yeah,
he did hold back on the fist bump. And then I'm super curious about the whole like temporal displacement stuff. Like, we know that it goes back in time or forward in time, but where?
And like, is Krasko maybe going to come back?
Yeah, like he sent him really far back in time, but like really far back in time did he land in an ocean? Like, where did he land? Is it just
in
Alabama?
A dinosaur's
just
mouth?
Alabama really, really long time ago. Did he end up in an iceberg? Is he in the middle of a mountain right now? Like,
or did Ryan even do it right?
Yeah, you know? that's a
he
possibility
could be anywhere.
Too. He said,
"That's
him
what
back
I."
To the
I find it interesting that Tim Shaw and Carrasco both kind of met a similar fate in that they just disappeared. And we don't really know if they're dead or if they just kind of have been pushed somewhere else and may come back with a vengeance. I think it's interesting that they're kind of leaving that up to your imagination instead of just clearly saying, oh yeah, this character is dead.
Yeah. Were you kind of expecting the doctor to be like, to correct Ryan and say you shouldn't have done that?
No. If the doctor was there when it happened, I could totally see that, because that seems to be an ongoing theme. But yeah, I don't know. Because how did he just told her, right? He got back to the bus and was basically like, hey, I got rid of Carrasco.
Yeah, he said he used the temporal displacement thing and shot
him
as far back.
So I guess that
would
have been a moment where she could have been like, oh, Ryan, you shouldn't have done that. Or
yeah, like,
I don't know.
There was no correction there. After she corrected Carl for kicking Tim Shaw off the crane and she corrected Ryan for using a gun, that's...
Yeah. Maybe she's starting to get more used to it.
Maybe, she's or maybe, like, yeah. Maybe with everything else that was going on, she didn't feel like it was worth...
Wasn't the right time.
Wasn't a hill to die on.
Another good episode. Three for three. We'll see. I don't know, man. I'm wondering if they can just nail it and just have a perfect season. We'll see.
I'm getting to the point where everybody needs to watch it. People are gonna hate me for saying this, but I don't know if Doctor Who has ever been this good.
This good?
Yeah, it is so good right now.
I won't disagree with you in that statement, only because I feel like it's never been this consistently good. I think that there's Doctor Who is a show for me as a fan that it has highs and lows, and its highlights are some of my favorite things in the world, certain episodes of Doctor Who. And then the down episodes, I would not want my friends to know I watched that. you know, there's some episodes that I'm almost embarrassed, like, oh, I watched that show. And if that's the episode people watch, they're like, wait, you watched Doctor Who? That show's horrible, you know? And I've always been really transparent about that, you know, my criticisms of certain elements of Doctor Who that I'm not a huge fan of. So I'm not such a fanboy that I just love everything that they give me. But I think, yeah, right now I would agree with you that I don't know if I've ever been this happy with the consistency of a show of Doctor Who. You know, having three episodes back to back to back with a brand new Doctor and to really not have hit any kind of a down, been impressive.
Yeah, it definitely is.
And it's like, you know, we're three episodes in, and I think both of us would probably admit that Jodie Whittaker's version of the Doctor really stands alongside of every modern Doctor that we've had. I don't know if I'd go as far to say that she could be my favorite Doctor. That wouldn't be fair just because she's only had three episodes. But man, if she stays this consistent through her entire run, I could see her definitely becoming my favorite Doctor.
It's definitely going to throw things up in the air, and there's going to be a lot of rewatches in comparison, but it's on pace. I mean, mm-hmm. there are just so many moments with Whittaker's Doctor that it's just like, oh, me too. Like, it's good. It would force a lot of rewatches of some of my favorite episodes to then compare and be like, okay, where am I really going to come down on this? Because that's going to be a question that people ask. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a question, and I got to be prepared.
That's a question I'm going to ask. I think after we're done with this season of Doctor Who, I think a nice recap of where we feel like it stands, you know, where some of these episodes throughout the season that are our favorites, where do they stand alongside our other favorite episodes? You know, are we talking about, you know, is Ghost Monument as good as Blink? You know, is Rosa as good as 11th Hour? You know, those are the type of conversations I think we can have once we've seen it all.
Yeah.
Have a full episode at the end, a recap episode where we just kind of talk through some of these things and see where they stand.
Whew. A lot of discussions, a lot of things to figure out, y'all.
All right. Well, for now, I think we can wrap up this episode of Bad Wolf Radio. As usual, anyone that is listening to this episode, you can always leave us an episode, or you can always leave us a review on iTunes. Head on over there. If you are a new listener and you like what you hear, we'd love for you to go to iTunes and leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio, our Facebook group. You can find it by searching Bad Wolf Podcast. And if you want to join, send us a message and we'll let you in. Instagram at Bad Wolf Radio. And you can shoot us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time.
Go somewhere else. Find a beach, read a book.
What is that from?
That's from this episode.
Really?
Come on, dude. Seriously. It's from this episode.